newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press. Now you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery. She wanted money to...
The Media Project is underway. A half hour of commentary and analysis. Some days even some good insight into the media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, editor-at-large of the Times Union, and I am hosting this in an extreme situation, which we will all explain to you shortly. Dr. Alan Shartok is here, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. How you doing, Alan?
I'm doing good, I suppose. We're all in the middle of making tremendous adjustments.
Yes, we are, all of which is part of the major topic of the program here. Barbara Lombardo is here, journalist professor at UAlbany, former executive editor of the Saratogan and The Record. Barbara, are you there?
I am here. I'm wearing my UAlbany t-shirt today.
Oh, and I can't see it. I'm sorry, because we're not in the studio. And Judy Patrick, vice president of news for the New York Press Association, former editor of the Gazette in Schenectady. How are you?
I am here. I am here. I am here. Okay. An old Dr. Seuss storybook.
Just so everybody understands, our listeners, this is our first show of the Media Project that we have produced using the social distancing, which everybody is practicing these days. If you're a regular WAMC listener, you've heard some of it before, and you've certainly heard it off NPR with anchors from their homes. And it is, of course, just a major way that the coronavirus outbreak is affecting the news media in general. Alan, how are things going with WAMC and having to produce this entire radio station, in effect, from across the network's geographic range?
Incredible. And you know, you mentioned something just now, Rex, which I found very fascinating. There is a little bit of a problem between WAMC and NPR itself. NPR has been putting on the president, but has been injecting, and you're listening to NPR's coverage of, and we have made it very plain to NPR, we don't like that. Cut it out. Let us hear the president. It's not necessary to inject yourselves during that time. And we are quite vehement about that. This is sort of par for the course with these guys. So we're working out the kinks, but it'll all work out.
Certainly, I think every newsroom is going through this. The Times Union newsroom, which ordinarily has dozens of people working there, is, I believe, an empty cavern. I think basically we have one person there per shift, and probably a few more than that at night as they're actually putting the paper together, but not many, because we're even able to paginate, that is, electronically put the pages together from home nowadays. You know, we're fortunate that technology has enabled a lot of distance production that wouldn't have been before. Judy, I know you've been in touch with editors around the state of New York through your job. What are you hearing?
We're hearing the same thing, that so many newspapers are having the reporters and their editors work at home. For many of them, they're smaller operations that had to, you know, get up to speed on this new technology, so that was a challenge. But the other thing we should all be thinking about now is that we have always encouraged our reporters to get out and talk to the people and to see what's really happening in real time. But now that we're all isolated, it's harder to do that, and reporters are doing more and more of their news gathering via phone or by the internet, and that's a strange new world for them.
It is. That conflicts with the notion of firsthand observation and needing to be really present at things. We've also instructed our photographers to try to avoid inside spaces to see if they can meet people that are trying to take the picture of outdoors. But sometimes if you want to get the story, you need to go wherever it is. But it's like covering a war zone. Some things are too dangerous to cover. You know, photographers and reporters who have covered conflicts know that sometimes there is a roadblock that you simply don't go beyond. That hasn't been our mindset in covering government or anything else in this country. it's really changing the nature of things.
Without question, Rex, you guys are absolutely right about the new technology that allows us to do so much of this. And we'll be working out the kinks of all of this as we go. Nevertheless, the number one question for everybody is the virus and what's happening. We see in the case of the New York Times, I had to read 5 stories on Wednesday on the virus before I got down to this other minor league story, which is who won the primaries, the Super Tuesday
exactly.
primary.
Exactly.
You're so right, Alan, because even this morning, mainstream television news that would have led the newscast, you know, tornadoes destroying property in the Southwest would have been major news. It's barely mentioned. And it's mentioned after 10 minutes of the coronavirus, understandably.
And we're all waiting, of course, to find out what Bernie Sanders is going to do, because he's been losing all these primaries. And we're hearing drips and drabs, which is he's reassessing, he's thinking, but we don't see anything more than that. That would have been leading every single station and every single newspaper just a few weeks ago.
It's a more intense version of what is always the challenge in journalism of deciding what story is priority and what isn't. You know, through the years of my career, there have been days when I've thought, you know, we just shouldn't have a front page today because there's nothing very interesting. Let's just start the newspaper on page 2. But this is not one of those times. This is one of those times when one big story so overwhelms everything that a lot of stuff that would be front page news doesn't get covered. And you have to think about that, Alan, as you're saying, in the context of the presidential race, which is, of course, hugely important. But this certainly takes a distant second slot to coronavirus.
And of course, everybody wants information. So the name of the game now is to round up experts who can tell people what to do. On CNN, Dr. Gupta is the number one star. We haven't heard that much from him lately, but boy, now he is their star. And we all at WAMC have to find people who will go on our Vox Pop program, you know, the People's program and other places to tell people what to do because people are scared to death.
Yes.
Judy was pointing out to us via email about things that very small newspapers are doing. Livingston County News, which is the county that my husband grew up in, Western New York, things that they are doing to help their citizens in their small towns cope. I don't want to steal your thunder, Judy. Did you want to talk about what some of those papers are doing?
You know, it really is a time for local news to shine because that's what people really care about. In Livingston County, they've created this Google map which shows where people can pick up food for their children if they're home from school or where the food pantries are, where essential medical services can be provided. I love the story out of Suffolk County, the Smithtown News, where they've paired these college students that are home with nothing to do with senior citizens who are lonely by phone, and the college kids are reading the paper to the senior citizens. And the editor there says it's hugely popular, and it's really reinforced the idea of the local newspaper as the entity that brings the community together. I just hope.
And it's a win-win, Judy, because then the college students are actually reading the newspaper.
Imagine that.
But I would be remiss if I didn't also say that as this consumer economy shuts down, all the advertising is flooding out of the newspapers, and there's real financial stress on every media organization across the country, and we need to be aware of it. My daughter said, well, the newspaper must be doing really well now with all this news. Well, they're not, because while there's an ample amount of news, there's not an ample amount of advertising, and that provides about 50% of revenue for most newspapers.
And that may take us to another story, which I was mentioning to you guys before the show, which is that the very able editor of the Berkshire Eagle wrote a piece yesterday basically saying people still love us, we hear it wherever we go. And by the way, in order to keep printing on paper, newsprint, which we have discussed many times, is extraordinarily expensive, we're going to each accept a little bit of a pay furlough in order to keep the paper going. Well, that's the Berkshire Eagle, which had a bunch of very wealthy people supporting it. But as everybody's very large wealth diminishes by a lot. You should see my TIA Cref account. It's unbelievable. I have a feeling.
We all like to see that, Alan.
Yeah, that's fine. I've been hearing about it for years.
I think that the sugar daddies who support these kinds of enterprises will be in less proliferation. Let's put it that way.
It is going to be difficult. And I believe there's a significant pay cut for these journalists. Well, not just the journalists. Yeah. I'm sorry, for the people at the Berkshire Eagle, right?
I believe that's what I read, that everybody's taking a little bit of a pay cut. That's right. Accepting a certain amount of furlough time, which may end up being the same thing.
Yes, right. It does raise a question of whether the physical newspaper will in fact continue. Of course, as Judy points out, the print product is sustained by advertising, and the advertisers don't have enough money to support the undertaking. Yes, we can go to digital, but the revenue is so much smaller. And again, with the recession surrounding us, in effect, we know that there just isn't going to be the money to support the journalism that people are looking for, quite essentially.
You know, Rex, that's a profound point you're making. And you've always talked about the amount of money that we pay for newsprint. You've also made the point that many papers will not be here in 10 years. And it certainly is looking that a lot of them will go to electronic delivery. But the problem with that, as you say, is that people won't pay the same amount of money for being an electronically delivered newspaper as they would if it was in print before their eyes on a piece of paper. And if you get a newspaper like the Berkshire Eagle, which has won the award for being the best newspaper in Massachusetts, I believe, or in their class for years now, and has collected a huge staff based on the largesse of the people who are supporting it, the very wealthy people who are supporting it, then you say, okay, well, what's this all about? What will happen now if they go? Will they have to fire staff because they've collected all the staff because they won't be getting the kind of money they need, which is something you just said?
Yes. You know, I've said for years that I think journalists are going to become like dancers and actors. We will have work sometime, and then we'll be waiting tables in between the gigs. That's not a good way to sustain journalism. It means that an awful lot of stories that need to be told are not going to be known. And here's an additional complication from this particular crisis, the coronavirus issue. That is that people want to have free access to information. We have, at the Times Union, for example, put all of the coronavirus content outside the paywall. That is, you can get access to the information even if you don't subscribe. That took us a while to get to that because the basic subscription rate for a digital Times Union is only 14 cents a day. And, you know, if people are so interested in this information, you would think they'd be willing to part with 14 cents a day. But you would be amazed at how many people have scolded me before we put this outside the paywall, who were very, very angry at me, blaming me for the fact that they actually had to pay for our product. Now, we're not asking people not to pay when they go to a shoe store. People are not expecting that they don't have to pay for the food they pick up or the toilet paper if they can find it from the grocery shelves. They're not saying you paper dispensers should make your toilet tissue free because we need it. But they are saying that to the news media, and most of us are responding by putting it outside the paywall. But that ultimately is not going to sustain journalism, right?
Absolutely right.
I think he is right. And I forgot what newspaper said they were going to be printing blank pages in case people needed to use it as toilet paper so that we're serving both of them at once.
I think that's smart.
It ties back to a couple of issues that the news industry has maybe dealt with not as well as we should over the years. One is recognizing people really do want us for news. And we were always cheap. We were always came across as it only was a few cents or 50 cents or even when it was a dollar for a newspaper, that it was something that they didn't have to pay anything or a lot of money for. And then the online, people were used to not having to pay. That takes an adjustment on their part to realize that we are a product and that they need us.
Well, that's an interesting...
And you're right, Rex. It is affordable.
That's an interesting question, Rex. I'm going to throw one to you or to the gang. Maybe somebody will be able to answer it. Is the amount of money that we spend on newspapers today a larger percentage than it was of something than it was in the old days? I remember when I was a kid, my parents would give me a quarter and say, go out and buy the Daily News and the Daily Mirror and two other papers, and I could get it for a quarter. Now, I know there's been inflation. My question is, are we charging more for newspapers now proportionally than we used to?
You know, I really don't know the answer to that.
You're asking us to do math. Come on. Part of the issue is that we're providing, unlike, say, toilet paper or the other goods people need, we're providing a public service, which is why we're not going to say you can't see this news unless you pay for us.
Judy?
Can I make the point that the news media is a credible source of information? What I'm seeing on social media now are a ton of stories that are wrong, offering incorrect information. And whenever I want to check and make sure something's true, I go to a local newspaper, part of the mainstream media, to make sure it's really true. And I think what people need to realize is they're paying for credibility.
Right, which sometimes has been in short supply, even with our government or with certain outlets of the news media. We need to talk about, without trying to be too partisan about this, the fact that the president for much of this year has been saying that this is not a big deal, that coronavirus is something that will have maybe one person and we'll get it through with it. And of course, all of his supporters at Fox News have been echoing that until suddenly, when the president realized that he really had to address this issue politically, Fox News hosts turned on a dime as well and suddenly started agreeing that it was important. The difficulty, too, is the use of the very term coronavirus versus the president calls it the Chinese virus. It's also not true. And while you can quote the president, that is not an accurate description of what it is. And it's not something that a journalist should ever use.
Fascinating.
Right, but I think journalists should not use it, but journalists need to report that the president is saying it, followed by a retort or a nut graph after each thing saying the virus is called COVID-19 and
right,
it's not a national virus. We have to keep repeating to the public in our stories and calling it out in the mainstream media whenever it's mentioned by him like that. I am really concerned about the president rewriting history and rewriting his reaction to the virus. And we have to be careful about that, too, so that I think the mainstream media, every time they're saying we've been on top of this forever, there has to be something in a lot of those stories that say, you know, until such and such a date, he poo-pooed it or called it a hoax. We have to keep reminding people so that we don't let them rewrite the story. He's a master at rewriting history.
I want to ask a question. You just mentioned a nut graph. I have no idea what that is. Can you explain it to us?
So the nut graph would be the nut, like a kernel of information that summarizes the point of the story or provides some background and explanation of the things you're talking about so that things are put into context and that the meaning of things are clear, so that you might want to have a sentence or a paragraph ready to go every time you have to provide that retort so you're not doing it from scratch. Or the Associated Press or bigger news organizations should have something that their staff would use so that there's some consistency in accurately portraying the situation.
If I could just say that the whole concept of journalists doing analysis is terribly important. So, for example, Andrew Cuomo all of a sudden made a turn of his own. He is widely respected for the way he's handled all of this and giving direct information to the American people and to the people of New York State. Nevertheless, analysis is important. And all of a sudden, Andrew Cuomo is playing ball to some degree with this president. And you know what? He's doing it. And I think we have to explain that in the papers and on the radio and every other place, because he wants to get resources for New York State. And in fact, he's getting them.
Yes, that's interesting. And that is a great political analysis. It is very interesting to see. You know, there's so many stories that flow out of this that I hope citizens are paying attention to the news, because what you just described, for example, is an important political analysis. But there's so much for people to pay attention to just with respect to how to lead their daily lives. And this is a time when we really need journalism. And I think part of it, Alan, to your point, is that we do need to let people know that those who are now posing as people who have been on top of this all along are not that. I mean, take Devin Nunes, for example, where he was the guy who spread dangerous misinformation. He went on to Fox News saying, hey, it's a great time to go out to a local restaurant because you can get in easy. Go to your local pub and support them. Well, that is endangering people, that is spreading the virus. And that's what Congressman Devin Nunes was doing, because that was the signal that he was getting from the top, from the people who run the country, which is, of course, the Fox News commentators on Fox and Friends. Sorry, I'm just being a little bit sarcastic there, but the change in the president's tone is not the foremost story of the day, but it is something that is important for us to bear in mind as we look at the stories that we are trying to keep track of as we go along. You know, another story that is of some relevance here is China has expelled a number of journalists. In fact, China has just moved to expel basically all the journalists for the New York Times, the Washington Post, and the Wall Street Journal. And I think they are looking at a couple of other news organizations as well. This comes after the U.S. designated 5 Chinese state media outlets as foreign missions, and therefore capped the number of journalists who could be working for them in the United States. This, unfortunately, is a consequence of a rather clumsy administration interaction with China, the result of it being that we don't have journalists for our major national news organizations now able to cover China and getting accurate information about what's going on there with the coronavirus.
You know, you got
very awkward situation.
You know, Rex, you got such a good point there. Think about this for a second. All of a sudden, we're being treated to the idea, which we're very anxious to hear, that there are no new cases in China. No new cases in China. Well, if you want to believe it, fine. But if we don't have people on the ground there who can report on it, then it's almost worthless as news, don't you think?
Yes. We don't really know if it's real news. We're losing some of our capacity to see into China because of this. I don't know if the United States did the right thing by determining that these Chinese state-controlled media are actually foreign missions. It seems to me like we have dealt with Chinese journalists and state-controlled media in the U.S. for years. So I don't know why we need to change it, but it certainly has affected the ability of Americans to know what's going on in the second largest economy in the world.
You know, there's some indications that these reporters are also going to be expelled from Hong Kong, which has been their base of operations to cover much of Asia. So a lack of clarity on that issue indicates what's happening with the Hong Kong-China relationship going forward. Does China want to be part of the global community and become a standard member or not? And I think having mainstream press there is the way they can do it. And I think in the long run, this is going to hurt them.
You know, Rex, you mentioned something which is very interesting, and that is what the motivation for doing this is. We know that this president has been trying to demonize China all along, in fact, calls this a Chinese virus. So to take their people down at this stage of the game, maybe following the president's game book, which is followed by, because this is the media project, by implications for modern journalism.
Absolutely right. And if we are unable to get accurate information around the globe, we are then subject to propaganda, to manipulation by public officials who are putting out their own media for their own purposes. Ultimately, I don't know that the president would be worried so much about the Washington Post not being able, or the New York Times not being able to have their reporters in China.
Good point.
Also, by the way, is we're going to have a lot of topics week after week on this program, and we can't deal with them all. But one thing that I do want to make note of is the value of digital journalism that uses visual representation. There's this remarkably successful visualization by the Washington Post by a young guy named Harry Stevens, who created a visual for the Washington Post website on why outbreaks like coronavirus spread exponentially. Barack Obama retweeted it to his 114 million followers. The president of Venezuela showed it on state television. It was perhaps the most read item in the Washington Post's website history, even more than the Access Hollywood tape when Donald Trump was running for president. Imagine that.
What was his point, Rex?
It visually shows what a quarantine can do, the value of social distancing. It shows how a virus spreads. So if you haven't seen it, I urge you to Google Washington Post coronavirus flattened the curve and see what this is like. It was a very important and great visual representation, which is what modern technology journalism can do these days, better than we can do just sitting here talking, or better than what we could do in print in the old days before we had the interwebs.
And let's hope that that's not behind a paywall, although I'm a Washington Post subscriber online, but a lot of people aren't. So is that available for everybody? It sounds like it would be.
Good question. Good question. Oh, you hear that sound? That means that our time is up.
No.
Yes, I'm afraid it is.
Sounded like somebody's phone to me.
No, that was just a timer. I had no idea that there was going to be noise on that.
That's what I love about WAMC and about our productions. You know, we're real.
Right.
Not foo-foo. This is real.
This is real. All right. Enough real life for just now. Judy Patrick, Barbara Lombardo, Alan Shartok, and I'm Rex Smith. Thanks to our producer, David Gustine, and all the folks at WAMC for making this possible, and to you this week for tuning in to the Media Project.
They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now you remember Mrs. Sadie Smuggery.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok is CEO of WAMC, Professor Emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. Barbara Lombardo is a journalism professor at the University at Albany and former executive editor of the Saratogian and the Troy Record. And Judy Patrick is the Vice President for Editorial Development for the New York Press Association. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people, like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ting-a-ling, ting-a-ling, ling-a-ling-a-ling. Now, newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the guild. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now, publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.